Welcome to another episode of Finding Joy with Kara. I am your host, Kara Kavinsky. Today, my guest is Betsy Blankenbaker Murphy. Betsy is a powerful storyteller. She is using her craft across multiple mediums. She has created three very powerful documentaries, New York in the 50s, based on a novel by Dan Wakefield and starring Joan Didion. She created Althea and Angela, based on the lives of two outcasts at the time in the professional tennis world who became champions by partnering together, and Something to Cheer About, which is a very meaningful, very important story in history, which features the Crispus Attucks High School basketball team, which was the first all-Black team to win a state championship. And they revolutionized and helped to integrate collegiate and professional basketball. Betsy is an author. She wrote Autobiography of an Orgasm and several subsequent anthologies based on that storytelling element of literal sexual healing. Betsy has created and recently published a book called Write, W-R-I-T-E, On. The book is filled with a year's worth of writing prompts. She coincidentally released it in January of 2020, just in time for the pandemic. Betsy encourages anyone to tap into their inner storyteller. Betsy has another book coming out set for release later this year called Chasing Temples. She has performed on stage in one-woman shows in yet another medium of artistic expression. And if that doesn't keep her busy enough, she is a grandmother to two adorable toddlers. She hosts writing workshops, both virtually and at very desirable destinations around the world when travel permits. So please join me in my conversation with Betsy Murphy. My guest today is Betsy Murphy. I am so grateful that you are joining me today and sharing your story. I would love for you to provide your, like, if you could design your own introduction, how would you want me to identify you? Because you're so many things to so many people and are just shining your light all over the place. And it's hard to quantify something that massive of, it's like trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and you're just wonderful. And I'm so grateful for everything that you do. But how would you describe yourself?
If there was a title of like Miss Curious, I would say that's how I would describe myself. First, as far as like comprising the work that I'm doing, I truly am following my curiosity, and that leads me to being a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker first, and a writer, and and gathering women in circles to help support them in writing and sharing their stories. So basically, I just follow my curiosity. So I don't know how that can be a title. And then the other title that I'm really most proud of right now is being is my new title as a grandmother, which is Gogo in Shona. I spend a lot of time in Zimbabwe, and I'm a grandmother of two young grandchildren right now, and I have four adult children. So I'm very proud of like entering this role of being an elder matriarch, and it's so curious right now to explore like what that's like in a world that values women under the age of 40 more than over the age of 40.
That's amazing. And I love that attitude about it. So with the Autobiography of an Orgasm was earth-shattering to me when I read that. And I was so impressed with the candor, the honesty, the absolute raw intimacy that you share in that book. What inspired you? What events occurred? Now, I know that you needed a lot of healing from abuse, and you know, it's a heavy topic, and you explore all of it in that book. But before you engaged in writing that, and I guess my question is, what inspired you
to explore healing? When did you start on that journey? And when did you know, I need to help others with this process?
I wish I thought the book would help others when I published it. At the time, I thought I was the only woman in the world that had never had an orgasm. And I had quietly, never shared this with, I'd been married twice. I'd had four children. I'd never shared this with anybody. And after my divorce, and in my mid 40s, when I had this life that looked good, but didn't feel good, I quietly decided, I stopped trying to fake it basically. And so I thought, well, quietly, people were putting things on bucket lists of, hiking the Pacific Coast Trail and, traveling to exotic places. And I was like, I'm putting having an orgasm on my bucket list, before I die or before I turn 50. Is it even possible? And at the time, it never occurred to me that my body's lack of feeling anything was ever related to something that had happened to me earlier in life during my childhood, which at the time I hadn't remembered. And I think this is why so many people who have experienced abuse, both men and women, don't speak up, because when you have these memories in your 30s, 40s, 50s that have been suppressed for a long time, you wonder, did this even happen to me? Is this another, fairy tale I'm making up? And then when you do, you do realize this happened to you, you're like, well, I don't want to share it, now. But what I wanted to do was figure out, I trained as a swimmer, from age 8 through 18, I swam in college. And I knew you could train your body to, to become stronger, to learn how to do certain things. So I thought maybe there to help my body remember. And I literally took my body on as it's just like a research project, like an anthropologist, to see if it was possible for me to feel anything after so many years of nothing. And, the good news is it didn't take forever. And also I, abuse, any kind of abuse, emotional, physical, sexual abuse can change the biology of your body. And then you can change it back.
Right.
I
realized when I, well, first of all, why is it that you think women, we feel like we're all alone and isolated in our experiences? Because I have felt that same way. And I hadn't had an orgasm until I was able to be with someone that I had safe space with. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this? What just happened? And it was earth shattering. But in that abuse and suffering part, after I experienced narcissistic abuse for a long time, a couple decades, I thought I was the only one. And then when I was in a writing circle with you and you encouraged me to share my story along with Bob and Joy, with the Finding Joy book I have coming out soon, I gave a chapter to a friend of mine, and she read it, and it was a chapter about an argument. And she said, I live this every day. And if I didn't know you, I would say that I would accuse you of spying on me in my household. And it was through that process that I realized that most of the women around me were dealing with some level or at various stages of healing from narcissistic abuse. So why do you think that women, we think we're alone? Is it because we're not talking about it? What is it?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a family that didn't talk about it. My mother grew up in a family that didn't talk about it. So we're repeating family, patterns of our families. And so if there's not a safe space to even go to your sister, or I didn't feel like there was a safe space to go to talk about it, we're just repeating all these patterns. For me, the change was, having a daughter and also three sons, but having a daughter who all of a sudden came up to me one day and said, listen, something happened to me and I need to talk about it. And at that point, I hadn't even dealt with my own. I had never expressed what happened to me. And so I was like, what am I going to model to my daughter and to my sons? But it took me, I feel like with some of my books and films, I'm ahead of time. And then, but with my own figuring things out and healing, I'm like way behind the times. I'm really proud of like this generation that's coming up now. But it's because we've started the conversation. We started, you know, opening, you know, we've started the conversation, even though it makes people really uncomfortable. And then the other thing is we live in a society where women are constantly shut down. You're called crazy. That didn't happen. You know, if you've been in a narcissistic relationship, you know, and we have, you know, women with, and you know, that have been with high powered, you know, high profile, powerful men who have signed NDAs, non-disclosure clauses were set up for, you know, trade secrets for business, not to shut down the voices of women. And so, you know, this is a silencing women. It has been a problem, you know, for generations. And I'm glad we're seeing the complete reverse of it now. And in my book, Autobiography of an Orgasm, I was not trying to accomplish any, you know, sort of feminist revolution. I was simply trying to share my story in the most honest way. And one thing I'm happy about, and it was completely unintentional, but, you know, some of the early reviews that came out said, you know, oh, this is, it's actually a really fun book. You know, there's a really funny parts to it. And I was like, at first I took that, you know, offense because I was like, oh my gosh, this said is it was my sensual path.
Because they said it was a funny book. You took offense to it.
Yeah. But I thought I'm doing my job because it's important to get angry. It's important to cry. It's important to grieve. And then, but when I didn't tell the story of what happened to me, I told the story of how I healed my body. And it was not, I couldn't read. Say, here are the 10 steps to heal. I truly followed my curiosity and then tried to, you know, explore these new things I was learning, tools I was learning with men. And it was just going completely wrong because I still was not using my voice. It was even as much about me speaking up and using my voice as it was feeling numb from the waist down.
Right. And an honest account is exactly what that book is. Like from that regard, I will say, yeah, you accomplished that. It's pretty raw, but in a respectful way for yourself that you express that. And it's such a powerful story that then you had so many people, so many women and men writing to you. And those subsequent anthologies that I mentioned in the introduction are those collections of other people's stories. And I wondered, how did you even begin to select those or to filter through them? Because you received so many.
Yeah. I released three anthologies. So the first book, Autobiography of Orgasm, was released in 2014. And then I released one every year. And the intention was to continue. And at this point, I've just, you know, done those three anthologies because what I'm seeing is women and men were naturally speaking up anyway in a healing way. So, you know, but when I released the last book, it was in 2017. And all of a sudden the Me Too movement started happening. So people weren't, you know, speaking up as much before then, or they were being dismissed. Suddenly, women were being heard and believed as well. And so, I only had so much room in the book, but I wanted to cover, and I still was not completely inclusive, but I wanted to cover, one of my favorite stories is a woman, Fig Alley, who writes about, trying to tell her, you know, parents when she was 4 years old that she knew she preferred women, and, you know, nobody believed her. And then it has an incredible, incredible story in it, a twist of a woman that was a girlfriend who, you know, couldn't speak up to her family and ended up taking her life. And as these stories are so important because at the beginning, you were, you know, one of the things I do with women and men is, you know, set up a space for us to talk about the things we don't talk about, and both with each other and even in our own families. And one of the most important things that I do in my writing circles is when we do share a story, we do it without feedback. We do it just for other people to take up space with our voice and our story. And so other people just listen. So we're not telling our story to get validation. We're telling our story sometimes for the first time. We're listening to ourselves speak the truth about sometimes something we've never shared with anybody before. So I'm super proud of the collection, but I felt like, you know, people are telling their stories, so I didn't need to keep releasing the books. I thought of it as like a chicken soup for the soul, but for orgasm. And I'm glad that, you know, people are still sharing their stories, but can we share it in a healing from the, you know, from that place, from that scar that is healed versus, you know, from the wound? Because if we're sharing our story, publicly from the wound, the potential is to keep triggering our body and to believe that we're in danger, and you potentially can cause other people to be wounded too. So it's important to, you know, write the story out the first time for yourself, and when you decide to speak it publicly, you know, tell it from the place that is healed.
Yeah, I do think that's important. I think it is challenging to go back to, especially if you've gone through a healing process, to go back and share, you know, the anger and the frustration and that isolation and insecurities and the abuse and the stress that was felt in the moment when you may have triggered or healed from much of those triggers, hopefully, and rewinding the clock a bit can be challenging, but also cathartic. And what is your advice to women and men who have gone through really challenging circumstances and abusive scenarios to step forward in healing? And I'm obviously huge on the storytelling element as well as a cathartic piece of it. But what if they're absolutely terrified to actually share their story publicly, or how do you recommend those initial steps be taken?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no, you know, 10 steps to this. And for me, I had done years of, you know, therapy, and I have an incredible therapist, and yet I wasn't even telling her the full truth. And so there comes a point of, are you willing to tell yourself the truth? Are you willing to tell yourself the truth, even if it's a hard truth? And a lot of people don't want to deal with that. And even my own loving mother will always say, you know, that's the past. That's the past. Well, we're dealing with this in our country, in the US right now, of, you know, people are saying, just, you know, we need unity. We need unity. Well, we also need accountability. We need to look at the truth. So for me, the truth of myself meant I couldn't project and blame everybody else. And in my book, I feel like I do a good job. I'm not blaming the men that either attacked me or didn't stop, because I was curious, why didn't I speak up? And I wasn't blaming myself either. I was curious, why didn't I stop? Why didn't I run? Why didn't I fight more? So if you're in the spot of like saying, I'm, you know, something happened to me and I don't want to relive it again, well, you don't have to, but writing helps get it out of your body and onto the page. And then speaking it even once allows it to, it really allows you to reclaim your voice back. And so, as I said, there's no 10 steps, but I would recommend, you know, for me, I didn't know writing was going as important as I did all these crazy, in the book you read about them, you know, went to sex experts and, you know, everybody was, going to give me my orgasm. And I had a Chinese wand made of herbs that is supposed to strengthen your, vagina. And you know, I did, you know, jade eggs. I did all these experimental things and those were all important and sacred. And in the end, none of those made a difference to me,
because
feeling my body again. As important or more important was just taking the time to write down the stories. And because eventually the first story is going to be painful. It's going to be painful. And eventually you are going to write in the direction of not making that moment matter, but you make it mean something. You don't make it mean something, you make it matter. And so it's like taking control. Writing helps you take control of that narrative. And so for me, writing was so important. And then speaking it for the first time, and the first time I told my stories on stage, I did spoken word things. And I always chose like the saddest, darkest story, because I thought, oh, you know, people will have so much empathy and compassion for me. And people, the audience, you could just see them like lean away, you know. So I realized as a storyteller, it's important. I was not telling the story in a way that was healing for me or healing for them. And so there's these nuances as you write your story and then speak it, you know, of choosing the stories that are going to heal versus choose the stories that divide. And we've lived in a especially in the U.S. for the last 4 years, of seeing how important our words matter. So it's making a choice. When you do share your story, are you going to tell it from the place of being a victim? Or are you going to tell from the place of this happened to me and this is what I'm with it. This is what I've become.
When was the moment that you realized that accepting responsibility for your own healing, your own orgasm, what was that like to acknowledge taking responsibility? And did you blame before that?
I absolutely... it was in my 40s. I wasn't even trying to have an orgasm in relationships, you know, with men then. I didn't think it was possible. And I was too afraid to tell the truth, you know, through marriages, through incredible relationships with men post-marriage. I was chasing connection, but I was running from it as well, because connection meant intimacy, meant telling the truth. And so there got to a point where I kept wondering, wow, you know, these, you know, it wasn't that I was dating bad men. I was, it was that I was not willing to be intimate, both with my words and, you know, fully, you know, and with my body and receiving. So it was a humbling of like, I can't blame these men. I had to look at myself. I'm like, I'm the common person in these relationships that I'm running from. And I'm really proud of myself, because I took time off from being in a relationship. And when I was doing all this healing with my body, especially after I released the book, I had people, women especially, write to me and said, oh, I'm, you know, great for you, but something like that happened to me when I was younger, and I'm too old now, or I don't have a partner, or I can't afford to take these courses. And I thought, I don't want that to be an excuse for a woman or a man not to, you know, feel joy, feel bliss in their body. And so I took off from being in a partnership, no more courses, like I'd healed myself. But I was just curious of like, if I listen to my body for 15 minutes a day, and literally like stroking my body in the way that feels good and brings pleasure, it's not the same every day. And I was so proud of like, that for a year, I'm not in relationship with anybody. And it turned out to be the most sensual year of my life. And, but I took ownership of waiting for someone to give me something, waiting for somebody to save me. And you know, took ownership of like, I'm the common person here, and I can't, you've got to stop being a victim in all this. And thank goodness, cause I'm turning 58 next in a couple of weeks. And it literally is the most central time of my central time of my life. And, yeah.
So you've talked a lot about the physical healing. What was the emotional accompaniment to this for you, and how did that play a role?
That's such a good question. And it's things that I'm still working on now. I've been divorced for 21 years, 21 or 22 years. I've chosen not to be I've been in relationships. I had an incredible man propose to me. I just kept saying no to these relationships. And so emotionally I had healed my body, but I thought, what am I running from? My next book is called Chasing Temples. It's coming out this year in 2021. And I'm chasing connection and running from it at the same time. So the emotional part is of healing is trusting myself. And I'm still working on it. I mean, I trust myself and I'm still working on it. And the one gift through all this is I have experienced really great love in my lifetime. And I think the love that you're looking for when you're in your 20s is different from the love you're looking for in your 30s and 40s. And as a elder, grandmother, matriarch, when I do choose to fall in love again, it's going to be completely different from anything I've ever experienced before. So I love that I have that to look forward to. And I'm completely not in any rush. So I'm, you know, I feel very good and complete. And yeah, but that emotional part is I've really been looking back on, in the same way that I look back on what happened to my body 20, 30, 40 years ago, I've been looking back on the impact of what happened to me 20, 25 years ago. And that during, you know, those times, especially post-divorce, there was somebody that I was in love with, and I just recently found a box of love letters. You know, this is pre-internet and cell phones. We actually wrote letters to each other, and it's such a gift. I randomly found them at Christmas. I was looking for important documents that I needed, and I found a box of love letters that had been in storage for 7 years. And I actually didn't even know I had them. These are 19 years old. And they were from an important man that I dated right after my divorce. I started to read the love letters, and this is, you know, one of the great loves in my life. And I couldn't read them and I realized in the same way that I had, you know, gone back and explored 20, 30 years ago, healing my body, there's a part of receiving love and being able to, you know, be open to fully being loved that I wasn't, you know, that wasn't happening during my marriage. And once again, it had nothing to do with my husband at the time. And it happened to do with me. So this is definitely this new book, Chasing Temples, part of it is about, making the choice to stop running from connection and turning away. But it's the, you know, I feel like I've done all this work around self-love with myself. And yeah, there's definitely some emotions of why won't I let somebody else in? So that's a whole nother podcast.
Well, let's talk about that when you're ready. I would love to love to address that. That's a big thing. So let's have that be our part two. But we'll put a pin there for now. And you have had these amazing writers or writing workshops that you host, these retreats and these very beautiful destinations around the world. Zimbabwe is one of the retreats for a different reason, or maybe same healing thread, as well as Bali. And I would love for you to discuss how you chose those locations and what drew you there and what you've done. And then also, how has the pandemic impacted travel, and what have you been doing in the last year since we've been isolated, aside from playing with your grandkids, which I love seeing those photos on Instagram?
Well, it's the weekend everything shut down last March in 2020, I was actually going to be hosting a writing workshop at my home in Northern California. And the theme was rejuvenation, you know, writing and rejuvenation. And, you know, and I had to cancel it at the last minute. People driving from, you know, 3 hours from near and far to, you know, be here. And it was interesting because then I went into this year of, it was the opposite of rejuvenation. And I normally host writing retreats in Bali and then in Zimbabwe, Cape Town, London in the fall. So all my retreats in the fall. Well, in March, April, I was like, well, I'll still be doing those. You know, the pandemic will be over at the latest July. And yeah, so I've had to cancel all of my travel. It's weird. I was only on planes for, you know, 45-minute flights in 2020. And it's actually been incredible because I've had this time both with my two young grandchildren who are 2 and 3. And it's given me time to write, obviously. I was supposed to be releasing Chasing Temples in the summer of last year, 2020. And then we're in the middle of this pandemic, people struggling. Then all of the Black Lives Matter protests started, very important. And I just kept moving the release date of my book back because I was like, you know, not that my voice didn't matter right now, but the story was suddenly evolving. And my story goes from, you know, Indiana to Zimbabwe. And I finally just put the book on hold and I'll release it this year. And I've added a few more chapters. And obviously you'll hear about this love story. But I also, you know, the book wasn't self-help, but I realized we didn't, like Autobiography of an Orgasm, I wouldn't classify it as self-help. But I would classify it in some way as like self-healing. And Chasing Temples was becoming too heavy of a book. And I wanted to, at the end of the day right now, we're dealing with some big, big important issues and healing that is not just my family lineage healing itself. It's 400 years of our country healing itself and much bigger than my story. So I've pulled back on the book and just wanted to show some thoughtfulness and respect for what was going on, but it will be released this year. But it's I've definitely added some lighter stories in it because right now at the end of the day for my own body, with dealing such intense times, we have to balance out the heaviness of what's going on in our lives or in the world with a heavy dose of joy, vitality. I need to laugh. So I've, you know, done that with my stories, I hope.
Oh, that's great.
Still be activists and advocates and do the important work. And we also need to balance it out with joy, laughter, you know, pleasure. And it doesn't take away from being an activist and advocate.
I think it helps provide focus of the end game in feeling joy, in feeling that and wanting more of that through the work of being an activist and eradicating systemic racism and all of the heavy things that all of us need to assist with in our own way and in larger ways with this conversation. But if you stayed in a dark place with that, which is a very dark topic, to be clear, very, very, very heavy, that you would not be serving the cause as well. And I hope that all of those individuals and everyone who is on that team doing what they can to help are providing that balance. And by experiencing joy, you know what you want the end game to be, and you know what you want everyone to feel, not just in that moment, but you know, for a long time, or sustained feelings. And you know, we all need more joy in our lives. That's the tagline for this podcast. It's so obviously true that we all need more joy. So, what advice? I asked you advice earlier for individuals, but with some of these broader conversations and the isolation that people are feeling, you know, there is some gathering and the protests have been outside, and miraculously the Black Lives Matter protests in particular were not super spreaders because most people were wearing masks and were distancing, and it worked, unlike other gatherings that have happened. But what type of balance or what type of things do you think that you recommend for people?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I that meant a lot to me in this past holiday was I released a book in December 2019 called Write On, a daily writing practice for anybody with a story to tell. And at the time, you know, I had no idea that 2020, we would be, you know, by March, we would be shut down, not just in the US, but in the world. And the book gives you a prompt for a 15-minute daily writing practice. And I'm sincerely not plugging the book. I sincerely am saying I have people come to me and say, and write to me that said, you know, this book kept them going during the pandemic, because the book isn't asking you to write for an hour about the, you know, biggest tragedy in your life. The book is asking you to open up a page of the book, read the prompt, and just allow it to guide you for 15 minutes. And sometimes, so the story, the prompt might be...
well, can I share mine?
Yes.
Can I share mine? So when you first, and I didn't have a copy yet, of your book, it was, you were just like teasing, like, you put out something like a challenge or something, like the first X amount of people, throw out a number between 1 and 365, and I'll send you that writing prompt. And so I chose 22, and that writing prompt is, in the midst of challenging moments, I like to write in the direction I want my life to go. With this prompt, we are going to give ourselves permission to explore our future. It's 5 years from now. Write a story beginning with, just when I thought things couldn't get any better, this happened. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And of course, I bought the book as soon as I could. I'm holding it in my hand right now. And I marked that page, and I've bought copies for friends, or I will like open this up randomly, take a picture of something and send it to a friend that I think needs a little stoking of their creativity. And you have wonderful resources in the back, which I didn't realize until you shared that with me recently. To be honest, I've just been focused on the prompts themselves. So I almost wish that was at the beginning, just to be clear. So, but it's a wonderful collection, and there's some amazing symbolism, and I wanted to point this out, that when you wrote Autobiography of an Orgasm, and I was just floored at the sincere depth of vulnerability that you provide in that book, and I can't overemphasize that, it's impossible. I took the cover of your book, made it really small, and copied it multiple times on a piece of paper. And I sent it to, I printed it, and I carried around a small little, almost like a business card size of your book. And I used that as my inspiration, saying, if Betsy could write this, I can write Finding Joy. So that meant a lot. And there's this huge O on the front, big, big O, right? Orgasms are huge. And by the way, it's the nicest, kindest thing you can do for someone else, by the way, is give them an orgasm in a safe space, that's permissive and, of course, loving. But then you took the O and you twisted it and laid it on its side in an infinity symbol. And you have these beautiful birds flying away from the line. So it feels like an amazing journey and a literally a twist on the initial logo. Did that come to you or did you realize this later? What is the story behind that?
Yeah, no, I realized it later. I wish I could say there was this big, planned out, but it wasn't. It came to like everything. It came to me later. And, the point being, if we don't take time to write our stories down, then we're saying that they don't, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And what I did with Autobiography of an Orgasm was took something that, shouldn't have happened to a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 25-year-old, a 35-year-old. And I wrote beyond the pain and grief, and I found the joy in it. And that's what, that's what that twist is. We don't have to make it a happy story, but you can find the joy in any story. And one of the gifts of 2020, I gathered weekly with a group of writers from 3 or 4 different countries. I offered a summer writing series, and the best stories I read this year and heard weren't, from Hollywood. They were from the people in this writing group. And so if we can take the time to write our stories, that's one thing. But when you share your story out loud, you just don't want to inspire somebody to tell their story or write their story or heal a part of their story. And this is why I would love for anybody to, in my book, right on at the end, I do have a, chapter on publishing, traditional and independent self-publishing. I also have a chapter on how to make your own writer's circle. You don't have to, everybody that comes to my writing retreats or groups, they always will say the first thing, I'm not a writer. Well, you're going to have to pretend, just like I pretended that there was the potential that my body could feel joy again. We're just going to pretend for 1 hour or 8 weeks that you are a writer. And, in the beginning, there was the word. And so it's up to us to continue in our life, making sure that our words matter. And, so in my mind, everybody has a story, and you don't have to be the best writer in the world. You don't have to know how to diagram sentences. There are great editors for that. But you can tell your story. And when you tell your story, even the hardest points of life, you can find the joy in it. And that's where healing comes. And when I say that word healing, it's not just like, I'm healed. It literally biologically, your body comes back into balance. And all of a sudden these neural pathways that were shut down everything lights up again. And that's where we should be living from, that pulse of joy, of bliss, of remembering that, our story matters.
Well, and I think too, when you think of a less than pleasant experience that someone's, gone through, whatever it is, that by looking at, well, if this didn't happen, then I wouldn't be here or XYZ, or if I hadn't experienced decades of narcissistic emotional abuse, then I wouldn't appreciate my boyfriend as nearly as much as I do. And I'm grateful for the experience because it's led me to a place that I could not have even imagined being. And with how happy I am now, I really didn't know was possible. And I hoped there were, I hoped it was possible. I just didn't know what it felt like. You know, I knew wherever I or whomever I was going to be with was going to be infinitely better than where I was. I didn't know it was going to be this good. And that is what is exciting to me. So I think by just simply sharing a story or witnessing there's nothing more powerful than realizing what's possible. And just knowing that it's possible to heal even the worst situation. And I know that it's a sliding scale. So I will never pretend that whatever I've been through is trumps anything else, like that someone else has. Like, I totally honor and am grateful that my situation wasn't worse. Although I will say that emotional scars and the internal ones that you can't see are some of the worst, in addition to the physical. So while someone may see a physical situation, they may not know the mental and emotional impact that that had, or other things that they've experienced. So it's, I do believe it's important for all of us to share respectfully our experiences, and you never know if that's going to be helpful for someone and resonate with them. And I thought, when you released Autobiography of an Orgasm, like, whoa, you're just going for it. You know, there's no sugarcoating this. We're not baby stepping into this conversation, people. We're just jumping right in. Baptism by fire. Hello. With that topic. And I was just so blown away, and it was so powerful. And I'm so grateful for you. And I'm so grateful that you joined me today, and you must join me again, because we need to further this conversation. And I'm so excited to hear about the Chasing Temples release, and the timing will be perfect when that comes out.
And thank you for reminding everyone to find their joy.
Thank you for listening to Finding Joy with Kara. You can learn more about Betsy at her website. The link is in the notes for the show. BetsyBMurphy.com, and I hope that you continue along your own journey to finding joy in your life. Thank you.